Hello again, and this is David Collins with BitNote, the last BitNote before we take a break. I'm sorry, but I'll explain a little more later. But for now, we'll be playing some great video game music and talking about the games they're from. I hope you enjoy. Yes, as I said, we're taking a small break here at BitNote. It's probably going to be for the summer and probably not going to last too long a time, just a few months. But it's just, there's a couple of reasons for it. But before I go into it, I think I'll just have a little song that just explains a little bit how I feel about this. And that was Event Sadness from the video game Sonic Adventure, developed by Sonic Team and Sega. And it was composed by Fumi Kuatani. So yeah, I know, it's always a nice touching song, and it was said at a moment where someone was thinking back to a time he could remember, and then at the end of the game when things start to wrap up. It's kind of a bittersweet, somber tune, and that kind of works pretty well, especially at the end of the game, because it involves peace and the resolution of something, but also a lot of heartbreak that had to be gone through in order to get to it. But yes, to answer your question, I will be taking a short break from BitNote. This is currently the 74th episode so far, not including two Christmas episodes. So I've kind of been at this on a pretty damn good stretch with only missing an episode here and there. So I think I've done I deserve a bit of a break at least. It's not goodbye, it's just see you later. And I'm not even going to be completely abandoning the show in the summer. There's just been a lot going on, and I think it's time just to take a bit of a break from it all. But I will be working on ways to improve the show. I think that there's still a lot of potential that this show has, and I'll be coming up with some more, developing a few ideas I've had for the show and ways of improving it. And they all pretty much center around just giving, you know, more gamers a voice, trying to bring attention to other great games and undiscovered creative efforts. And I think if any of you would like to be interested, if there's any game series you feel I should talk about, if there's any music you think I'm neglecting, if there's this game thing you're passionate about with games and you want to express it in some way on the show, please feel free to send me an email. My email is listed on the dublinsouthfm.ie website, and of course it's also listed on my website at bitnotefm.com. But in any event, just feel free to contact me if you've got any thoughts or ideas. I'm not saying I'll immediately accept everything, because I don't want this entirely to be steered by the audience. But I mean, I just love, if you've got something you want to express involving video games, if you feel that there's more potential, any ideas at all, I'm open to them. Because I feel that, you know, with over 75 episodes done completely by me, I think I've covered most of, or at least the general thrust of, what I think and feel about video games. And I think it's about time I let other people share their thoughts, because there's so many different perspectives. The great thing about a game is that it's not just there's no single perspective. There's no single point of view. Each person has their own different viewpoints, their own moments they played the game in their lives, how they react to it, how they felt, how they play, and even how they've played it. That's what makes a difference from films and TV shows and everything. How people play a game completely differs, changes the experience that they've made to it. And some games have actually fallen a little short, because I think of a little of Alpha Protocol, a game where, you know, if you had to play it in a certain way in order to get the most out of it, even though it allowed you to play other ways, but they tended to be less polished. But I'm getting off the point here. The point is, if you've really got something you want to talk about with or play with video games, just feel, or any ideas, or even any other game events you're interested in, just feel free to send me an email or tweet me on Twitter at bitnotefm, on the Twitter account bitnotefm, and I'll respond and we'll see where it goes from there, because I think I'll definitely be working on Bitnote in the absence, and I still think that there's a lot of cool things we can do, and think maybe even episodes I can record during the break as well. So, I think I'll choose this exact moment to switch over to a completely different video game now, because we're playing the last video game, this is the last Bitnote episode of for now, there's no reason not to break with tradition. So, how about this track from a game that I think was a little underrated, but recently released and a lot of fun. That, my friends, was from the great game Sleeping Dogs. That was the main menu theme by Jeff Tiermaschuk. He's a Canadian composer who's also made for a lot of EA Bond video games. And by the way, I should play some more music from some Bond games some of the times. But yes, on to Sleeping Dogs, which was made by United Front Games. Sleeping Dogs, completely underrated. You're an undercover cop in Hong Kong, and essentially you're trying to work your way up one of the triad gangs called the Sun On Yi. And your name is Wei Chen. You know, you've had a bit of a checkered past, but you know, you went over to America you were brought over to America with kids, ended up becoming a police officer over there, went undercover there, and now that you're back in Hong Kong, they're looking for someone who's a police officer and can go undercover, and so he ends up going undercover in the triads and then trying to meet up with all these people who are kind of childhood friends, and then he's got a whole twisted loyalty thing, because is his loyalty to the police officers who's paying him, or for all the criminals which he ends up developing a bond for. So there's all that sort of stuff, but long story short, other than that, you get to do a heck of a lot of action stuff. It's not all just drama. You get to drive fast cars around an entire video game depiction of Hong Kong, and you're able to drive on the highways and down and then through markets and all these sort of places, really fast speeds, and you're pretty much able to carjack any single car you see, which, as you see, is a lot like other games, a little like Grand Theft Auto or other sandbox games that has even cities. But it's kind of fun because you're kind of on the side of good, and even if you do something a little bad, well, the reason for that is because, of course, you know, you're just meant to be pretending to be someone who's undercover, so that works out pretty well. I think there were a couple of true crime games that had a similar premise, which I never quite played. This was originally going to be have the name True Crime, but it was really just a marketing thing that was planned at one stage in development and didn't quite pan out. But the game is also fun in a lot of other respects. Not only can it's got a nice system where you can shoot from a driving car, which I know sounds cliche, but it's actually kind of really fun to shoot from it. But really, the game, true to its setting of Hong Kong, actually downplays a lot of gun elements, and a lot of the time it goes for the standard martial arts, which is pretty kick-ass because, you know, you're kicking ass for one thing, but also because, you know, if you're going to set a game in Hong Kong and not throw in martial arts, it's like setting in it's like setting something in Paris and not having any romance. It's just part of why you're there, so to speak. So the game is a kind of a pretty advanced, you know, martial arts system. It's kind of simple, but it's also tricky enough. One of the great things is that if an enemy is about to hit you, they flash red for a second, which gives you time to like counter moves. A lot of games have a counter system where you have to press a button at the right time and everything, but I think this one works really well because you can suddenly see it coming and you got to act very quickly. And if you get really good at this, and you know, like any good game lets you get good at something with enough practice, you can suddenly have everything, you know, chain off a seamless set of moves that'll just keep smashing and smacking your opponents in every way possible. I mean, this is like a lot of those classic, you know, martial arts movies. Suddenly one guy, a whole heap of enemies, some of them are coming at him with, you know, with like tire irons or cleavers and something, and you just have to react, jump, bang, you know, react, fly, and hit, smack, kick, everything, you know, just hit the right buttons, the right combination. If you can go to this martial arts club, and if you're turn hidden statues, they'll teach you a few more moves, like some pretty ones that'll make you grab the enemy and like practically slam your foot down on their, you know, leg and stuff, and which technically is meant to break their leg, but they suddenly get up and seem to walk pretty well okay. And of course, you got to grab melee weapons and try to, you know, if someone comes at you with the cleaver, you have to react fast. And then sometimes if you grab someone, you can like throw them in a dumpster or the back of a trunk or something. So it's kind of funny at that. But generally, it's just the most important thing is that any time that there's a fight sequence coming up, you look forward to it because it's generally a lot of fun, and it generally requires a bit of skill to get through, which makes the whole thing a lot better. The plot is pretty decent. You've got some missions you do for the good guys, you know, the cops, and some for the technically bad guys, which are the thing. And the whole thing is hugely inspired by Hong Kong movies, most of which I haven't actually seen. Yeah, despite the fact there was actually a TV channel, I think it was called CNX or something, which was really good at showing Asian programs, and I did catch a few things there, like Hard Boiled with John Woo. You know, you got to catch at least that one. But I was really not that good at keeping up with Hong Kong movies, so I apologize. So I'm probably missing the vast majority of references and inspiration that made this video game. I was able to pick up a few. I was really excited when I managed to catch out that one of the costumes, alternative costumes you can wear, is essentially Jackie Chan's one in Rumble in the Bronx, which is really one of my favorite movies, and because it's just so much fun. And there was a couple of other things I was able to catch too, like I think there was a reference to Banyok or something, but I think that's more Korean or something. I'm losing track. It's Asian action movie, and apologies if I'm not quickly getting on track with all of them. I did get the reference to Shenmue, though, you know, the classic Sega game, because of one of the jackets you can get in the game. But despite all this, it draws a lot of inspiration from this thing. A lot of the actual actors involved are Asian, including the main character. I thought, you know, wait a sec, did they get some American guy to voice this character? But no, I checked the credits. The character you're playing is half Asian, and so is the voice actor. So it's all makes sense. It's all there was a clear. A lot of times, especially when people tend to target American audiences, I know that's a stereotype, I apologize, but a lot of times when they do, they try to take any sort of culture away from it. But with this game, they really stayed kind of true to the whole Hong Kong Chinese angle, and I kind of liked that. It gave a bit more atmosphere to the game. So it's a good game. Nice vehicles, gameplay, locations you can visit. And when you get into the cars, a lot of times, like in a lot of games like this, music will play through the radio. Now, there's a lot of selection of songs. Some of them are actually rap, which I'm not quite that keen on. There's one guy who keeps going on about how, you know, people say that money doesn't grow on trees, but money is made of paper, so therefore kind of does or something. But Sorry, that got stuck in my hand. For some reason, a lot of times I entered a card, that would be the exact track that was playing. But in any event, it still means that there's a fairly wide selection of music. And I think one of my favorite tracks is something that really shows the more Asian angle to the whole thing. What I'm about to play right now is called From Zio With Love by Chum Hung Tam. So, one of my favorite tracks from the game, and have a listen. Hope you enjoy. And that was From Ixu With Love by Chum Hung Tam from Sleeping Dogs by United Front Games. I'm going to move on to my next song now, and this is from a game that kind of meant a lot to me, but have a listen. And that was Sky High Zone Theme. It is from the video game Sonic 2 The Game Gear by Aspect. And the composers were Naofumi Hataya, Mesafumi Ogata, and Tonori Sawada. Now, all three have done a lot of music for a lot of great classic Sega video games, and some working to this day. So it's some great music is in that game, and indeed some of the music from the game was reused in later games. But I think I'll unfortunately I'm just not going to cover them each of those composers right now, but cover the game itself instead. Sonic 2, Sega basically had an interesting version. It's one of the few instances where they had a game that and released it for a console, and then ended up releasing, you know, versions of that game for a console that came before the console it was originally released on. I'm confusing you all, guys, so let me just keep it very straightforward as I can. Sega released Sonic the Hedgehog on 1991 for the Sega Mega Drive, and then Sonic 2 for the Sega Mega Drive. But it also released other Sonic games, also called Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, for the Master System and the Game Gear. Now, because the Master System and the Game Gear were so similar to each other, they were both more or less the same version of the game with a lot of differences. But essentially, they were called the 8-bit versions. But essentially, the Master System was the game that Sega released before the Mega Drive, so that was the previous console. And the Game Gear was a portable handheld console that Sega developed that was very similar to the Master System. And the Game Gear was meant to compete head-on with the Game Boy. Now, I think it made a good shot, but I think we all know, even if you don't know much about video games, that kind of the Game Boy did tend to win that fight and kept winning the portable handheld gaming war right through to the Game Boy Advance, right through with the Nintendo DS, and were only really challenged in the portable games market when Sony came along with the PSP. And even then, really, I think only mobile gaming has really been the real challenge to portable gaming in terms of Nintendo. But mobile gaming came around, I think Nintendo had the game market, and back in the 90s, there were a lot of other people still trying to challenge Nintendo's dominance. Tricky enough. So, the Game Gear held host to a lot of great and Smash Sim held host to a lot of great Sonic games. There were always slightly different versions. None of them were exactly the same, though they took inspiration. I always thought it was kind of weird. It was almost like they ended up becoming half a game behind the Mega Drive versions, because I mean, Sonic 2, you know, it was like Sonic 3 for the Master System, which was called Sonic Chaos, was more inspired by Sonic 2 with the Game Gear, more by the Mega Drives. I'm confusing you guys. I'll just stick with Sonic 2. Okay. But essentially, Sonic 2 was a very sweet game. It was the introduction of Tails on the for the Game Gear platform, because the previous Sonic game on the Game Gear didn't have Sonic, and it had you jumping through a lot of zones and not being able to use Spin Dash either. It still took a while, and there were a lot of bright colored zones. It was quite a challenging game. The most frustrating thing was the first boss, you know, the first major enemy, which basically you had to be able to, you couldn't even attack directly. You just had to avoid these balls that were falling down, and it was so frustrating. It was the first game I learned how to get a level select for, and that helped me enjoy the game a lot more, because then I could hit the bosses in any order that I wanted and not just have to deal with the first boss the whole time. But I mean, the game was like my first real full Sonic the Hedgehog video game I ever played, and if you've listened to the show enough, you may gather that I am something of a fan of this series, just in case you figure that out. But I played through it all, and it was honestly may not have been the best game to start me on the franchise, because it is tough. It is tricky to get through. It's like one of the few games where you literally don't have any rings. You know, that's basically a second chance not to die when you deal with the final bosses. And among other things, the game is actually pretty damn harsh. I mean, I don't just mean that, I mean, in the standard thing, it's tricky and it's challenging and everything. I mean, in terms of emotional level, and that's not something I normally do. You'd think that, you know, with the level select, you'd be fine. But you see, most Sonic games, you know, you are Sonic the Hedgehog, you go after Robotnik, he's the bad guy, you defeat him because he's enslaving all these animals and robots, bloody, bloody, blah. And if you do it, that's great. If you don't, well, it's like most game overs. And sometimes, especially with the earlier games, you had a chance to actually get a best ending by collecting all the Chaos Emeralds. And if you didn't, well, maybe you wouldn't have saved the world just as much, or you wouldn't have got a cool animation, or the enemy that Robotnik was or you mightn't get an extra stage. I mean, it's like a lot of the games just had like a really good ending and maybe a not so good ending. And it's all dependent on whether you get the Chaos Emeralds. Now, how you get the Chaos Emeralds, there's usually 7, but in this game there's 6. Depends on the game, and sometimes you go into a special stage. In Sonic 2, you just have to find them wandering around, and if you get to the 6th level and you've got enough 5 emeralds and then you defeat the guy, you get the 6th. So, I mean, like, up to there, it's all standard, right? You know, with most Sonic games that, you know, you've got an object to defeat, you defeat Robotnik, and if you get the emeralds, it's an even better, you defeat him even better. In Sonic 2 for the Game Gear, Tails has been kidnapped. This is Tails. This is the guy who, in the Game Gear, in the Mega Drive version, you know, he's the cute two-tailed fox where in most other games after he was introduced, he's your friend. He's like a little brother to Sonic the Hedgehog. They're best buds forever. They fly around. And Tails, depending on the continuity, can be anything from 4 years old to 8 years old or whatever. So he's like this cute younger brother who's like innocent and so fun and cute. In most games, he just follows you around and helps you and he can fly and get you to better places. In Sonic 2 for the Game Gear, however, he's been kidnapped by Robotnik. The beginning of the game is literally seeing him run around and get picked up by Robotnik and fly away with him. And this is how the game starts. Not some whimsical plot to take over the world, which ironically would technically be more serious, but wouldn't feel as what would feel more fun and escapist. In this game, Robotnik takes him. And you've got to get him back. And you can't just complete the game or level select. You have to collect all 5 emeralds, beat for the 6th, and get through the entire game before he gets you back. Needless to say, it didn't always work out for me. And tragically, there were many games that I ended where Tails remained in captivity forever. Now, as tragic and heartbreaking as this is, the actual ending theme for the game, if you completely fail to rescue Tails, is actually pretty decent, and I was thinking of playing it on the show. If you actually rescue Tails and he comes back with you, everything's fine and you get a different tune. But if you don't, you just see Sonic running on his own through a landscape that gradually turns from daylight to dusk to twilight to darkness to dawn to a complete night. And then he looks up at the stars and just sees a picture of Tails in them of the brother he didn't rescue, and this whole tune is playing in the background. It might seem that that's a pretty depressing theme to play on, to end this show on, but I thought it actually made sense, because even though it was a bad ending, and even though I got so many bad endings, in the end, each bad ending was an opportunity to have another go and try to get the good ending. And without spoiling anything, I can say I eventually did. It was struggle, it took effort, it took a bit of luck, and I did it. And I think what better idea and what better note to leave this show on. This is the bad ending theme for Sonic 2, by Aspect for the Game Gear, and composed by Nafumi Hayata, Masafumi Ogata, Tomonori Sueda. And this has been David Collins with BitNote, and for this episode, all previous episodes, and all episodes after, thank you for listening. Thank you.